You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Myopia this summer, guys. We're in the midst of reruns. So, Daniel, I'm just looking at you. How you doing? So, what are you drinking on this cool July evening?
Ooh, well, I always go for a Blue Moon during the summer. It's got a nice tangy taste and a soft finish. It's great.
Sponsor us, Blue Moon. I was actually, we have a herb garden on the back porch, and I was making mint juleps, and they're delicious. So, we have a panel. Who's on panel tonight?
Oh, Matthew W. Quinn, the one and only. And we're talking about a movie I did back in the days of yore called The Last Starfighter.
And, God, this must have been second season?
Something like that, yeah. Because I was actually on this one, and I feel in retrospect I was unnecessarily vicious.
No shit.
Wow, you think?
Yeah, no shit.
Yes, yes.
So just quickly, Matt, this is one of your early picks. This is a kind of classic 1980s robot chicken style movie.
Classic?
Well, the premise is classic.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought originally when we were watching it, it was that movie, and I forget what it's called now, but where a guy gets a high score on an arcade cabinet, and then the army recruits him to be like a space fighter pilot.
Isn't that what this is?
Kind of, only it's not the army, it's the music
Aliens.
Man.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought. This was about that kid that randomly finds an alien device that lets him pilot a UFO, and Pee-wee Herman is co-pilot.
You're getting it mixed up with Flight of the Navigator.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Both of which I'm pretty sure I saw on the Disney Channel back when it was new.
Okay, yeah. See, that's my problem. That's my problem.
And we did both of them. Madison did the last
Flight of the
Navigator.
Good Lord.
And that's the one with Pee-wee Herman as this kind of like pod thing that floats around in a cabin. This is the one where there's an arcade game.
Yeah, the arcade cabinet. Okay. Now I'm on the same page as everyone.
We're caught back up. Daniel obviously has not re-listened before we recorded.
And meanwhile, I re-listened to this one at least once.
Oh, okay. Well.
And?
Well, this episode is a testament to how unreliable people's memories can be, especially after a really long time. Because I remember scenes that are not actually in the movie. So I must have forgotten it and kind of made up my own thing subconsciously as we went along.
No.
Well, back in the day, cable channels used to run extra scenes all the time just to pad out the runtime. No. So it could be. I know Planes, Trains, and Automobiles did that. They'd use like alternate takes to cover up the swearing. So something like that.
Okay, so I'm going to have to go to my grandma's house and find that VHS tape she recorded off the Disney Channel of The Last Starfighter. I'm pretty sure it's in the basement somewhere.
Oh, go for it.
And if I can find a VHS player, I can watch it and we'll see if I did make up a whole scene where they're all the Frontier's planes are on the runway and the Kodan just bombed them, Pearl Harbor style, or if that's something I just made up.
Is there any other steps to that process? Do you want to tell us your grandmother's address? And
not you of all people, Nick. You'd misuse it.
Yeah. I mean,
hey.
Hey now.
Hank Kingsley.
I'd also remembered a lot of 80s practical effects, and no, it's bad 80s CGI. I thought it was all models. Oops.
Yeah, no, this was in particularly, I remember some really rough special effects. This is also not a bad summer pick. This is kind of a casual, if it was We Hate Movies, they'd call it a hangover movie. But this to me is just kind of a Sunday afternoon, like not a lot's on. It's not a particularly action-y movie. It's kind of it's a relaxing movie, I recall.
How do you think the movie would have turned out if the guy was addicted to Frogger?
He would have jumped across a lot more interstates.
I guess so.
It would have been like that scene in like the last season of Seinfeld where George is trying to get the cabinet across the road.
Or that scene in Dodgeball. If you can dodge traffic, you can dodge a ball.
That poor kid.
And I heard they were actually remaking The Last Starfighter, which would be kind of cool if they can do it right.
Well, I think at this point they announced remakes just to hold on to the rights. I mean, that culture is dead. There is no more arcade culture. I mean, nowadays it would be like some 12-year-old who's at the top of a leaderboard on the PlayStation Network, and when they find him, he's just screaming out racial slurs every other line.
Well, there's actually a book called Armada, which is the plot of the last Starfighter updated for the World of Warcraft age.
Oh, that's the guy that wrote Ready Player One, right?
Yep. I think so. And so someone, I was talking about this on a Facebook forum, they could buy the rights to Armada, and they sell the rights to Last Starfighters, merge them together as like sort of the next generation of the Last Starfighter, where they're recruiting more pilots on Earth using newer video games.
Or Steven Spielberg could have just put the Last Starfighter in Ready Player One, and it still would have made sense.
The Ready Player One is right on the verge of making sense, I think.
So close.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't either.
It was okay. I mean, it was entertaining for what it was, but some of it was just kind of weird. Like, there's this whole second act where all the characters reenact The Shining, and there's like looking and just going, I hate scary movies, and it's like practically a 1930s blackface character. It's like, dude,
two things come to mind very quickly. First of all, Spielberg does nothing but nostalgia anymore. Even like The Post is just nostalgia for the 1970s. Mm-hmm. Second, that reminds me, there's an incredible play that I haven't seen. I've read the play, and I've seen scenes from it on YouTube, but it's called Mr. Burns, a post-apocalyptic show or something like that. Have you heard of this?
I've heard of it, yeah.
So apparently there's an apocalypse, and people gather around the campfire, and they tell the story of the Cape Fear episode of The Simpsons. And then they like retell the story as time's going on, like 1, 5, 10, 75 years after it. And then The Simpsons has become like a religion. But at first, it's just like the only thing they can all remember. And so they're talking through the episode.
Neat.
It's a great idea. The New York Times said it was one of the best 50 plays of the last 25 years or something. But that's what it reminds me of. Like, we're talking about now making nostalgic remake. Again, it's a Robot Chicken story we're talking about. But now it's like, Spielberg's like, I remember, because he was big into video games. They wanted to make him the director in Mortal Kombat, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is another episode.
They said they had Steven Spielberg, the non-unit Mexican equivalent.
Nicely done, Matt.
And that's where we'll end. We'll take you out on that. So enjoy the rest of your summer. We have another episode next week, another one the week after, and then we're back August 1st with regular episodes. So enjoy. Before season 5 comes out, here's another classic season 2 episode.
And I'm sorry, Madison, for being so mean to Flight of the Navigator.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy your summer.
Detected on Earth 2017. Is it the Doctor? No, it is a human using the number 42. They have the ultimate answer. They are having civil discussions about television, film, comics, books, and video games. Where is the fan rage? This is a threat to the Daleks. We must exterminate them. Humans must be hostile to each other so that the Daleks may rule supreme. Exterminate! Exterminate!
The 42 cast. Bad for Daleks, good for humanity.
Saturation of movie podcasts comes two hosts lacking in movie knowledge, but making up for with original movies.
All right, so we got a stenographer, vigilante, Indian who kills people with goat horns.
And goat bullets. The stenographer, colon, read that back to me.
Original songs.
Ant-Man, Ant-Man, you ain't got a chance, man. Super suit my ass, man. This ain't no enhancement.
All he can say, two words, one phrase, Hulk smash.
Add Lincoln notes to your playlist. Otherwise, you are a racist.
And original trailers for fictional movies. Adam Sandler, and introducing Sara Lee Evanson as Sara Lee Evanson in Infinite Blood.
Ted Bundy shames DMX a lot.
Like, no joke, I told a 12-year-old kid not to f*** up his acting.
It's our podcast, you dicks.
Molly speaking. Welcome to Dial M for Movie. Three questions, two minds, one podcast.
So, Matt, what are we doing today?
Well, today we are watching The Last Starfighter, which is a 1986 science fiction film.
84.
Flight of the Navigator is 86. Sorry, my bad.
It's okay. We were discussing earlier whether or not it came out before Ender's Game, and it apparently did by about 9 months before even the short story version of Ender's Game.
Mm.
So what drew you to this movie?
Well,
do you have a thing for reptile women?
I'll leave that to you, Nick. Actually, my grandmother taped this for me when I was very little off the Disney Channel, which back then was really new because I think the Disney Channel was actually first appeared in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And grandma still actually has the VHS tape with a label on it, The Last Starfighter, which she actually offered a loan to me. But between your not having a VCR and the fact that tape is probably 25 years old, it might not be such a good idea. And our buddy Thomas here volunteered his unopened DVD copy for us to inaugurate, so I think, guess that works out for everybody.
I want to point out three important things, CSI style, from your story. First of all, it would be epic if we were the only podcast in history to be disbanded due to a fire caused from an old VHS tape. Second, you just mentioned that our mutual acquaintance here, Thomas, brought a copy of his DVD, which is yet to be opened. Is that bode poorly for the quality of this movie?
I hope not.
Well, you are well renowned for bringing movies of much discussion.
So, I aim to please.
Clearly. So what do you remember about this movie?
Well, what I remember, I haven't seen that movie in many years, but I have, you know, you're going to laugh at me, this, read about it. Between what I remember and what I might have read about the storyline later, what I can remember is the climax of the movie involving the fighter going to full-blown, they call it the Death Blossom, I think, where it starts spinning around and around and around, shooting lasers at everything. I remember seeing that on screen because it was very trippy looking.
Death Blossom does sound like a phrase that Butnick would have screamed at Chalute Your Shorts in the 90s. What else? Anything?
And they kept talking about the frontier, whatever that actually was.
Mm-hmm.
And and as you seem aware of, there are reptile people.
Well, that was from the cover of the DVD. I really don't remember. See, yeah,
the next movie you can defend, I guess, is Enemy Mine. That definitely has reptile people.
Okay, I'll take your word on that as well. There's a whole pantheon of movies that I was blissfully unaware of. I do want to bring up that, since I know he listens to the show, Seth Green from Robot Chicken is probably the reason why I know this the best, because, excuse me, I've seen parts of this movie. However, this is possibly the most referenced movie on that show other than Star Wars and Star Trek, because there's always some kid playing a video game to save the universe. And with the train wreck that was Ender's Game, the movie, I can only imagine that this is somewhat better. It has to be. It cannot be as boring as Ender's Game.
He went there. He went there.
Well, you liked Ender's Game.
Yeah,
so
I did. That's why I said that.
Is there any last parting thoughts before we move on to watch this movie?
Well, let's hope the special effects at least have held up, because although this was the 80s, bad practical effects are still better than bad CGI, because at least something is there.
And that's your one-line review from this movie. At least something was there. This is technically a movie, as in someone put moving pictures to film stuff.
I mean, there was something physically there to interact with.
There sure could be. And I bet you there's a lot of mullets to interact with as well, because this is the 80s.
Yeah, warrior mullets to fight aliens with.
Warrior mullets to fight aliens with. And I think with that, we should go watch this movie.
Let the games begin.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week, we watched The Last Starfighter, the excuse I use for playing video games all the time. Yeah, that was terrible. I'm done. So, I'm Nick Hoffman, editor of Deal Better. Tonight, we're defended by
Matthew W. Quinn.
And on panel is
Thomas Herman,
Abby,
Madison,
Jeremy.
So Matt, before we get too far into this, you got to tell me, did this movie hold up as well as you hoped it did?
Not really. You know that whole bit is earlier about practical effects? I could swear they used models to do all the spaceships and whatnot. No, they didn't. They used what looked like PlayStation 1 graphics.
The only model they were interested in was Yolanda.
who's Yolanda?
Miss June.
Miss June, 1983.
Oh, her.
We learned that because the kid was looking through Playboy.
An 8-year-old looking through Playboys. That's odd.
You said you recorded this off the Disney Channel, right?
I'm pretty sure it was Disney Channel. They must have edited that part.
Who knows? Now, as you noticed from the intro, Daniel's not here this week because, I don't know, maybe he's dead.
He's traveling.
No.
Has no one has started yelling yet?
No one has started yelling. Growl! This is the worst movie ever made.
We love you, Daniel.
We do love you, Daniel. But since he's not here, doing the plot summary this week is Madison. So what do you got for us, Maddie?
All right. So there's a guy named Alex. I'm guessing he's about 18 years old. Finished high school. It's probably about this. I think it's like the summer before high school and anything else. Maybe it's still his senior year because they were getting letters for college. Anyway, Alex is playing this video game at his trailer park called The Last Starfighter. Apparently, it's a really big deal that he beat the game. Because everybody and their grandmother, literally, was out there watching him play this video game. He beats it. Everything's great. Yay, hooray. He doesn't get his loan for college. Sad times. Then this guy shows up in what looked like the Go-Go Gadget car named Centauri. And Centauri is from the planet Rylos, which is where The Last Starfighter takes place. So apparently, we find out that Centauri had marketed the game and got it out by Christmas so that people could play this game and it could be a test to find out who could be the last starfighter. And Alex is the last starfighter.
Well, he's only the last starfighter after all the rest of them die.
Well, yeah, there's that. So they all die. And then before they all die, Alex decides, whoa, this is too heavy, I don't want this, goes back to Earth, finds out there's a beta in his place, and the beta is basically this clone of him that takes over for him while he's in Rylos, battles out with this gross guy from like the Goonies, and Centauri gets shot, they end up going back to Rylos, and he's the only starfighter, so he goes up against Xur and this armada, and yeah, that's the movie.
That's about as well as I can do. If I may, you used a whole lot of BS words there. Is this movie filled with a lot of space mumbo jumbo?
You bet your asteroids.
This movie went a whole lot of nowhere for a long time. In fact, the whole Last Starfighter bit of it, where he's actually the last starfighter flying through space, takes up maybe half an hour of this two-hour movie?
At most.
This is a one graphic rendering away from being a bad video game intro. In fact, it looks a lot like the final scene of Descent we talked about. It's just, yeah, a whole lot going on here. Oh. we got nothing to say.
Which is unfortunate because the concept is actually pretty cool. They probably could deal... I'm imagining a modernized reboot where Centauri is running a World of Warcraft type game.
I'm up for that. I think that would be a really great movie,
and
actually.
Has much better effects and much more interesting looking aliens.
I would be okay with the reboot, but sadly the only person that seems to like going back that far and grabbing reboot seems to be Michael Bay. And
that would be terrible.
And since it's, if it's between this, what we have, and Michael Bay, I will stay. I would say it's a great pleasure to stay right where we are.
Yes. You do that, Ben. I'll make that Faustian bargain, okay?
It's my large pleasure to stay at this one.
At least the explosions would have been a little bit more realistic with Michael Bay. Those are badly written.
And Megan Fox is Maggie.
Oh, sorry, I forgot Maggie in the plot summary. There was his girlfriend.
Oh, wait,
no,
there's a reason why you didn't need to mention her, because she had literally nothing to do in this movie.
I think you were away. You left the room when she actually did stuff. When she actually found out that the dude was some alien clone and there was an alien war going on, she's like, okay, let's kill the guy.
But nothing happened. The whole Data subplot was unnecessary.
Yeah.
You could have skipped it and had a more concise... Well, you'd have lost, you know, probably a good 30 minutes.
We would have also missed the sexual urges of Beta, apparently.
That was the best part.
Slapping him was the best part.
He's not just these bland games. He also wouldn't have gotten to take his head off and give himself an ear job when he gets his head off.
Or two as an ear job.
And that part is actually pretty well done. There's his body working on his head, and his head just turns around and tells his brother to go back to sleep.
I like how he shakes his own head in disbelief.
Yeah. Oh, man. This happened.
This movie happened.
This movie cost $15 million to make, and after looking up from Box Office Mojo that Empire Strikes Back cost $18 million, where did the money go?
And that was in $19 instead of $83.
This was the mid-80s, probably well out of someone's nose.
That's what we were saying earlier.
Because it definitely wasn't going to any sort of sponsorship deals. They were drinking the cheapest beer I've ever seen. I think it just said beer on the can.
It just on the window.
Branded checks, whatever those are.
Brand checks. Bran.
It's for
fiber.
Low fat, high fiber diet is a good thing.
They really loved pooping back in the 80s.
That was part of Reagan's big strategy for pooponomics.
we're gonna get this country back on track and right in cycle.
plot.
Well, just to interject really quickly with my handy dandy smartphone, $15 million in 1985 would equal $32.5 million today. So that's still damn cheap in terms of budget.
Is it for those graphics? Because I could have made those on my laptop right now, and I don't have any kind of actual applications that could really make things. Like, I don't have Photoshop.
You know, the equivalent of your laptop 1980 is probably as big as this table.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, they went to the moon on less technology than we have in our smartphones.
We saw quite a few aliens that were like, looks like a Doctor Who alien right there.
We had a lot of Doctor Who references.
A lot of Star Trek references, too, because they stole half the scenes. Like, they had to have stolen a lot of those sets because they looked like, and the ships looked like Enterprise.
They didn't explode like Star Trek sets, though.
No.
You had Will Wheaton before Next Generation.
You did. This was a whole 4 years before he left.
We had the Death Star before the Death Star.
After the Death Star.
Sorry.
This is after.
8 years after the Death Star.
Sir Armada thingy was
That's no moon. We're going to just keep looking at you and saying it's not a moon, man.
And the defense satellites.
This movie was just kind of a slapshot together of other science fiction properties. We do need to talk a little bit about Alex, because he's the only character that's at all developed. Everyone else he just kind of runs into and either nearly kills or has to save the day from, like Grig, which is
a giant iguana
reptilian thing.
He's the one who's having a lot of fun with the part. He's, you know, enthusiastic.
Who?
The actor who plays Grig.
Grig actually has something to do. Alex doesn't seem to know how to act.
We aren't sure what Grig does, though. He may navigate, he may drive the ship, he may do neither, you know.
He did announce at one point what he did and then immediately did the opposite. So we don't really know what his point is, and we also don't know what his point of reference is. Because at one point, he is essentially training the kid. Because we have to remember, the kid learned how to play on a joystick and a throttle attached to a console standee. And then he's literally flying a starship after an hour of complaining. Then he's just expected to save the world, the universe, without any training, no flight sims with an actual ship. He literally goes into space with a prototype that no one else has used except for Grig, and then saves the universe.
He didn't even have a montage.
With a death blossom.
I was going to say that, thank you.
He didn't get to shoot the pyramids. Whatever you call a triangular 3D shape.
Oh, like his target practice?
Yeah, he had a little bit of target practice.
Oh my god.
But he was terrible.
10 minutes of it.
He was atrocious.
Don't fight the chair.
Relax into the chair.
Everybody needs a montage.
There was no montage.
That's what I'm saying. This movie may have needed a montage. One.
We could have taken out the beta subplot, had a montage, and this movie probably would have been a lot.
Ooh, we needed a good 80s soundtrack.
Could have been salvageable. And once Maggie learned out, he was a robot, it actually got a lot more interesting.
I want you to tell me what the point of the beta subplot is then. If you say we could have salvaged it, what's the point of it?
Because then you could have the whole thing with the alien assassins.
Could have had, didn't have.
Yeah, they did have. They had one, two, actually.
Two.
Two.
But they were only there because they thought he was back on Earth.
We had to have beta because at no point did I think they had time traveling kinds of technology. So they needed something to be in his place, because if not, the last time I saw him was, you didn't get your loan, so he ran away from home?
Remember? Where is he? Like, that's,
and then suddenly he was back in his bed moaning for 16 hours.
Moaning kind of suggestively for quite a while.
Yeah. That's when he was growing his face.
Then he gave himself an ear job, and then he resisted sexual urges.
But he needed to, I mean, they had to have the beta there, or else that would have been this Rescue 911 all over again.
This movie answers questions no one gave a shit about.
Well, that's true. I didn't say that I gave a crap about it.
Well, but that's just it. Like, I think at one point they realized, we need some jokes. And what if he had a robot? And you get the feeling that these were two different script writers writing independently of each other, because the scenes don't quite fit. It's a completely different tone when they're making penis jokes with the robot, and then they go back to space and they're like, you need to pilot better. At least he got two paychecks as an actor, because he was the only one who actually could do anything. He's not a good actor, but at least...
Cameron's a great actor. What are you talking about?
Yeah, for all you people out there in Radio Land, he kind of looked a lot like 80s Kirk Cameron.
And his girlfriend looked like Amanda Peet.
So who had, now, ladies, who had the better hair?
Ooh, Amanda Peet's character,
Maggie's
for real.
Maggie had amazing hair.
Maggie had great hair.
And for those of you in Radio Land, I'm working on the Alex Rogan. Alex Rogan. Mm.
I'd prefer you go with the Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah. I'm looming
up
close.
They're like cousins.
You can rock the feather.
You could feather it. I'll do your hair. Don't worry about it.
My producer's not amused.
You two for Halloween party need to have both of your hair done in the same style of those of Alex and Maggie. That would be hilarious.
That would be the first time I was recognized ever.
I feel like everyone here immediately tries to run from the conversation about Last Starfighter anywhere else.
No, but that's just it. Okay, we were talking about this down below. We've done some well-reviewed movies in the past. We did the first Batman. We've done even Batman Returns is well-reviewed. We did Wrath of Khan when Leonard Nimoy passed. This movie has a 76% on Rotten Tomatoes. We laughed through
amazing.
The whole thing, and we have nothing to say about it.
That's incredible that I got a 76. Like, I would have maybe given it under 50.
It's also
I'm amazed that it's guaranteed fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's also the only movie we could have done with the porn version built into it.
That's
an online beta, and Grig's
and all those
halfway
and
through.
All those middle-aged women at the trailer park who took very quickly to Grig when he showed up. I mean,
middle-aged is generous there.
Or 50 to 60-ish. I mean,
so the question is, why did he get a 76 on Rotten Tomatoes, and was it come down to critic review and such as that? But one of the reasons why I think it may have gotten a higher score than than we might think it deserves, is that this movie never really took itself that seriously, ever. Its intention wasn't to. It was kind of having fun with everything it was doing. And I think in that sense, it was a fun movie to watch. Yes, it was ridiculous beyond reason, but...
It did start out ridiculous beyond reason. When he won the game, everybody came over and was ridiculously excited. No one has ever been excited. His mom was the only one that was like,
she was the only one with a realistic reaction. Like, that's great, son. I could care less about you winning a video game.
And that is also the only logical part of the movie, because the kid's like, I just made a video game. Like, he didn't get into college.
He says...
he may not have gotten into college.
He didn't get the loan.
Alex does say, Mom, it's stupendous.
I like to think that he actually got the money for college, and his mom's, he goes, I got in the best score in the video game. I won the video game, and she just tore the check up. I guess you're not going to college after.
I got this, they delivered it to the diner, because apparently they know where I work at, and I had to open it, and oh, I'm so sorry. You can go to City College with your friends, though, that you don't have, because you play video games all day.
And his friends are terrible.
Yeah, they all make fun of him. Apparently they all get drunk at the drive-thru every
and
Saturday.
And sleep around. And try to nap
rope each other
on the beach.
And his girlfriend just goes and sits by herself while everyone is having sex when he can't go because he has to get the electric to the trailers.
But then she gets mad about his sexual urges and slaps him.
She's mad at him because he didn't want her.
Yes. She was mad at him for rebuffing her sexual urges.
Oh.
Robot Alex is telling regular Alex, oh, she stuck her tongue in my ear.
And this is a family movie.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
Is it my turn to stick my tongue in your ear now? Is that why you're mad? We remarked that we thought that Robot Alex Going to City College was a movie that needed to be made.
It could be the sequel, The Last Starfighter, Psychology 101.
So basically, the conclusion that I'm drawing at this point is the reason why Beta Alex had to give himself an ear job was because she stuck her tongue in his ear.
And messed up the frequency.
Ooh, I like that. I like what you're saying, not what... Sorry. I'm going to stop talking.
We can agree that the part on Earth is more entertaining than the part in space, which is literally a guy sitting in a chair going aim to the left, aim
with
to the
an
right.
Iguana.
With an iguana man.
Whose wife is a picture of his face with a scarf.
Yeah.
And 16 kids.
You know what this reminds me of?
6,000.
You know what this reminds me of? Gary Busey has a YouTube channel where he talks about hobbits and how you can't decipher the men from the women except for the beards are shorter.
That's the dwarves.
No, he talks about the hobbits.
Well, then Gary Busey got it wrong.
Oh, Gary. Don't question my Gary Busey knowledge. He talks about how hobbits go in packs of six, like SEAL teams. And you can only decipher the men from the women because of the shorter beards.
I think he was actually referring to SEALs, not like Navy SEALs.
No, he was a Navy SEAL, so he knows what he's talking about. That's why he's so crazy. That and the motorcycle accident. Wear your helmets, kids.
And the cocaine.
And the cocaine.
So I feel like we have to talk about the Rylos. That's the planet, right? Their hairdos and his stick.
It was the Van Buren haircut is what it was.
It looked like some of the aliens from Babylon 5.
Yeah. And it was like the current ruler's son had gotten banished, so he had a temper tantrum and brought back an armada, and he got his shiny scepter.
Zur.
They were letting Zur invade for them until he was no longer useful.
And he extended and retracted the end of his scepter.
Repeatedly.
It's like a switchblade.
It was like a Game of Thrones, but instead of the throne of like spikety things, it was just an unnecessary scepter, because he just wielded it at people, as though just holding it made him powerful, and they reminded him very quickly it didn't matter.
It looked like some kind of Batman weapon, because it had those weird, it almost looked like a Batman like design on the scepter itself. Well, the scepter.
He remarked that it was similar to the tree people's king's scepter, and they were like, well, you know, it takes more than a scepter to lead, and he was like, I know, and then
Then he said, "I am Groot," and then he walked off the scene.
No, then he stuck then his knife out.
Then he sent
the knife.
No, then he said the pen's mightier than the sword and wrote out a letter to them, and they all got along.
Phallic.
Even when he got attacked, he didn't stab anybody.
He did nothing. He was.
And
the
then
most...
he disappeared, and we don't know what happened. Really?
He got
we have no idea.
He got to escape pod. He flew out, and they also, and the people in Rylos all somehow knew.
It was a, you're not going to believe this. It was a sequel. They wanted a sequel so bad, and there better not be one.
There is not. That I'm aware of.
The second to the last Starfighter?
And
the penultimate Starfighter.
The very last
and
Starfighter.
And he wasn't even that intimidating of a villain.
He was a terrible villain.
He was a whiny guy with a funny haircut who had daddy issues.
I would love to know why you think he had daddy issues.
Because the whole time talking there. Head dialogue, you missed that, didn't you?
No, I saw that too.
That was just him talking smack at the head of the Star League, who turned out as his father.
But my point is, why did he take over the lizard or the group people?
He's a defector, and that he's useful to them, and they're all sick of him. But
why does he call them the Emperor?
He's not the emperor of these people.
No, he's not. He just thinks
he is.
Apparently, they have an emperor who put him in charge of the fleet.
Yeah, he got banished. The emperor was like, "Oh yeah, you can go invade your people. I'll help you." And then was really like, "Okay, murder him when he's no longer useful." And it was all about throwing a temper tantrum with a big armada at some. At the last Starfighter.
I feel like I might have been more interested in the Oreos while we were watching the movie, because I didn't catch that part.
I figured this out, that why the beta subplot, it works and why it's entertaining. I think most of us probably at some point enjoyed Not Quite Human.
I think because it needed no explanation. We got he was a robot, and he wasn't quite a person. Whoops! And, like, the rest of this is all just words being thrown around. Like, other than the fact that they repeat the opening dialogue of that video game 20 times, all the rest of the exposition is delivered in block text that someone just says for 20 minutes, and then we move on to, what's that robot doing?
It reminds me of Zelda. Like,
hey, listen!
Listen to this diatribe. Yes, no, move on. Like that's how this played out. This was like a video game itself.
Yes,
that's exactly how this was filmed.
That's
like a video
full circle.
Game.
We're done. I think we've nailed it.
Control save nailed it.
Is there really anything else to talk about this movie?
No, the fact that the guy who brought him there was it Prescott, the guy who was from The Music Man, and that was highly entertaining.
That was the best part of it.
And he looked like Sam the Eagle when he took his face off.
He did look like Sam the Eagle.
They also had a face-off moment where the Iguana Man touched Centauri's face.
He was closing his eyes because they thought.
I know, but it was like face off.
Yeah, body healed.
Yeah, the death that isn't a death had no emotional impact. That was not played very.
No one mourned Centauri. Then he came back. We're like, oh yay, hey, there's Centauri again.
Space con man is back.
We didn't know.
Magical handkerchief that gives himself a face and hair, beautiful hair,
flowing beautiful con hair.
We need to make the point here that so there's this whole, it's like a D plot that he's essentially a space criminal because he violated all these laws by turning the Starfighter recruitment tool into a video game. He's making money off all those consoles, isn't he? So he's going around the universe collecting quarters, and he's getting paid for finding a Starfighter, and he essentially dies and
he's
then comes back
man.
For more money. He's a wonderful con artist. He's a music man.
He's a what?
He's a music man, and he sells quit. I'm done. I could do that whole thing.
They did take his money away. He did get punished.
But he got his money back when the kid came back.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure.
No, they took
the money.
No, they gave it
because
back.
Because the kid left, and when he came back, the money would be given back.
Then he died, though.
But he
half died. But he keeps coming back. What is this?
The cat.
The cat in the hat who comes back.
Oh, God.
So he's a doctor, right?
Yeah,
he regenerates. He looks different for a bit. He finds companions to save the universe.
Yeah.
This just rips off of everything at once.
He wore a bow tie.
He had a DeLorean.
He looked like John Petrie.
Yeah. They were at Dalecki. It's supposed to be Dalek, but it was at Dalecki.
It was Dalek with a C and an I at the end.
Dalecki. Becky.
Where an alien hitman, you know, mugs a cop.
Alien hitman takes over a cop.
We called him the Turdinator instead of the Terminator because he was a stinky Terminator.
He was a stinky Terminator. I think we're just about done with this movie. There is nothing to say. Anyone want to go?
I've made my
points.
I'm trying to think about the fashion.
It was good for that time period.
And frankly, it was not atrocious. Like, there wasn't anyone wearing neon for no reason.
I wish Alex would have gotten a goddamn haircut, but you know what? That's just me.
I wish the Starfighter uniform didn't include breeches with knee socks.
Yeah.
I understand that one.
Yep. Or the helmets. They didn't need the helmets at all.
They had them up during all of the fighting scenes.
Yeah.
When they came down to look cool, they had the visors down.
But it fogged up.
There was literally no point in them being there.
There was totally two Zoidberg aliens, and their helmets went down along their
tendrils. But at first, we thought they were Oods.
We didn't think they were Oods. I mean, other than that, I could have used a little bit more 80s fashion. Other than the fact that they were all driving around in the back of the truck from Back to the Future.
In Biff's truck?
Yeah, with the giant row of lights on the top on the roll bar. And, I mean, Megs is usually just either wearing, like, her dad's button down rolled up or a tank top the whole
time. You gotta remember, this is a trailer park. I don't know how much fashion there can be.
Yeah, how much money they have to throw around, so.
No one was wearing a Freddy sense.
We haven't talked about Otis yet.
The best and most defined character in the show, in the movie. He was, who knows? He was a tenant.
The handyman. He was the handyman.
He was the super.
Were they?
Yes.
Oh, no.
That's why he had to fix the electric.
Yeah.
And Alex was his assistant or something.
Yeah.
There was Miss Boone would miss her soaps.
Her soaps.
It would have been so much better if she had said her stories.
It would have been
better. Yeah.
Because she still hadn't even made the move on Grig yet.
Yeah, because when Grig showed up, everyone is initially afraid of him, at the point where Maggie's grandmother, who she wants to stay in the trailer park to take care of, is pointing a gun at him. And yet, within about 15 seconds, everyone is getting real friendly with him, especially all these older women.
My intro should have been the only movie sponsored by Ludes, because no one reacts at all in this movie. People are kidnapped and brought to space, and his biggest contribution was, hey, where are you taking me?
Beta Alex gets shot, and Maggie's response is, whoa. He's got shot, and he's oozing green.
Have to be racing off in a truck. Let me get in the truck with you.
Well, that's what I liked about Maggie, is she figured out what was going on, and she had to go help take down the alien hitman.
But why? If your boyfriend gets shot by a cop for no reason, she would be like, hey, are you a criminal?
No, she was
because Quaaludes.
Gun and started bleeding green blood after Robot Alex started talking about how he admitted he was a robot. So she actually knew something.
If someone admitted to you that they were a robot, don't you think you'd A, react at all, and then B, if they get shot by an assassin, you scream a little?
He wasn't hurt that bad.
But you were so panic.
No one, if anyone in this room told me that, I wouldn't be that freaked out. I kind of assumed.
How do you expect me to prove to you that I'm a robot?
Get shot by laser.
Yeah. What color?
I just so happened to.
What color is your blood?
Robot.
Is it lube?
That was almost a thread. What color is your blood?
Is it lube and glow stick green?
We're like, peel back your arm, some wires. We see some sci-fi around here.
I'm not allowed to tell you whether or not I have lube or glow stick green.
Ooh, kinky.
Just for the listeners, that's how the Predator's blood was made, was KY and glow stick green.
Is this when you're going to add Hey Mom to the podcast?
I'm not embarrassed. Mom, what's up? What's going on? Aren't you proud?
The navigator, the flight.
I shared it. She probably did. Hey Mom.
Love
you.
About how his mom is like, oh, you're going to go off and live on another planet for a while? Okay,
see ya. No one reacts.
Meg,
except for Otis. He's the only one with a real reaction, and it makes no sense.
And he says, when you have this opportunity, when it comes, you grab it and you hold on to it.
That was something he said earlier in the movie.
But it was still fantastic.
You interrupted her point, and it was a boob.
No, but I mean, like, at the end, everyone, We have to just, I mean, we established earlier that the second anything mildly interesting happens in this trailer park, everyone shows up, so he's about to break a million points. The town, and at the end, when the UFO shows up, which again, UFO, people are panicking. This is something Close Encounters of the Third Time actually does well. Even though they're friendly aliens, people panic because that's what you do. They just wave.
Nope. Otis is panicking.
No, no, no. One woman had a shotgun. She didn't have a shotgun.
For Granny 4 seconds.
Granny had a shotgun. No, she continued to hold it as the lizard alien came down. And Otis freaked out and started whispering in case the aliens could hear him from his trailer.
Peggy, don't go.
Also, the only person who knows that Alex was a robot who blows up, right, is Maggie.
No, the brother knows something is going on.
The brother saw the two.
When Alex comes out of a spaceship, no one is at all concerned. And you would think, gee, who was the person on Earth for the last X amount of time?
Who we've been talking to?
Alien and the...
No, because actually, when just before the spaceship lands, she's talking to Alex's mom and a few others going, where's my truck? Where's Alex? Well, you see, that wasn't Alex.
But that doesn't make sense. Like, she didn't get this works because this is a sci-fi movie. If in real life you said, that wasn't Alex, you'd think he'd have been abducted by the Manson family. Right?
Otis does ask who had helped him put up the antenna.
And all
the stores.
Otis is the only one that knows something is up.
Otis seems to know a lot more than you might think for being the superintendent of a trailer park in the middle of nowhere.
Otis is another alien, isn't it? Like, this is like point zero.
That's where the sequel comes in.
My people need me.
Otis is Centauri's Earth counterpart.
Oh man, it turns into like Smoochie from the Simpsons. He just like goes up into space. Otis died on the way back to his home planet. Like,
oh god, that was a terrible episode.
Oh, that was fantastic. Anyway, I think we're done talking about this. Oh yeah, we're definitely done talking about this. We'll come to Matt last. So, Thomas, what do you think about this movie?
For a movie that doesn't take itself very seriously, I enjoyed watching it. And at some point, when I've imbibed enough alcohol, I will probably watch it again. I think that's pretty much where I sit on it.
Thank you, Abby.
You bet your asteroids I would put this on in the background while we were all drinking and like, hey, maybe we should put something on. It's one of those kinds of movies. It's entertaining, but there's a good chunk of it where you don't need to pay attention. My boyfriend took a nap and was like, oh, I missed nothing.
Yeah, no, that's good. Madison?
I second what everyone else has said. This is one of those movies I'd watch again in presence of the people I'm with right now, with more of the myopia group. With alcohol, I probably wouldn't watch it like just by myself, unless it was a really sad Tuesday and it was Wine Tuesday. I found it entertaining, and it had an interesting story. I think we've talked about it earlier. I think if they remade this now with a better budget, it'd be really, really good, and it wouldn't be goddamn Ender's Game. But this version. Yeah, with friends and alcohol, good time.
Jerry?
Yeah, I think this would be done much better today. And honestly, I was more enthralled by Madison's recaps and Abby's, you know, discussion of the, you know, politics and various details of it. So there was a good movie in here. They just didn't make it. So, so yes, someone for the love of God, please remake this thing. And yeah,
do it some justice.
Thank you. Yes,
Matt.
I second Jeremy's line there. That summed it up very well. It could have been a good movie. The concept is actually pretty interesting, and if it was executed in a less cheap and kind of goofy way with better acting, it could have been really cool. So if they could reboot this as like a new movie or as a TV show even, that would be kind of cool. But as it was,
I want to emphasize like two things. First, this is totally either great as like a you know, a recovery movie on a Sunday afternoon,
yes,
or as a party movie on a Saturday night, because so little important happens and so much funny, like unintentionally funny stuff happens. It's totally just a relaxing watch, you know. But I do just want to kind of point out from a cultural perspective, I love movies where video games are the thing that drives the plot, because this was an 80s thing, you know, the Wizard, stuff like that happened in the mid to late 80s, as opposed to in the 90s and 2000s where they were video game movies, which is something that never should be done ever again. I like that. I just wish this movie had stuck more to it being a movie about a video game, because when the graphics started taking off, it just looked like a bad video game. We had literally gone into the game and it was boring and it was not well done. That goes to the budgetary effect, but I wish it really had just been done like Matt pitched the movie, with practical effects and as a space opera with the video game being a plot device. However, we're out of time today, so I hope you tune in next time when we put a little bit more of your past on trial. Thanks for listening.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is brought to you by DudeLetter.com. It's hosted by Nick Hoffman and produced by Ann Burns. Our graphic designer is Scott Miller. The theme song is Caroline, written and performed by the Serenaders. Purchase their music through the Amazon link on DudeLetter.com. Questions or comments, please visit myopia.dudeletter.com or contact us through myopia@dudeletter.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Myopia Podcast and at DudeLetter, and find us on Facebook, Stitcher, and iTunes. And while you're on iTunes, please rate and review our podcast. Tonight's episode was also brought to you by Seth Green's Video Store, reminding you that the only decade that mattered for movies was the 1980s, and Adobe After Effects, guaranteeing you better effects than The Last Starfighter. Tune in next week when we'll put another little piece of your past on trial.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by the Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.